This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 488, recorded on March 14th, 2017. My name is Martin Spriggs, and we're here to talk about technology and ministry, and joining in that conversation, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. Happy to be talking tech and ministry on Pi Day with you.
Pi Day, that's right. Did you bake?
I haven't baked a pie, but I'm always happy to celebrate mathematics, so... Been watching some Khan Academy videos lately on calculus and just gets the blood flowing. It's really
exciting. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Calculus videos. All right. Well, whatever. is pi involved in calculus?
Yeah, there's lots of pi in calculus, for
okay,
sure.
I never took calculus, so I was fortunate to get my math done and move forward. But very nice. Anything else going on in your little world? Did you get a little bit of snow like we did the other day?
We did get snow, and yes, there are things going on besides the snow in my little world. This weekend, my husband and I bought an RV.
Is that right?
We did. We are RV owners, and so it's really old and really a good thing to just kind of learn about RVing in, and we're just super excited about it. So
it's not like who was the actor, I forget, in the Chevy Chase movie of Christmas Vacation, whatever it is. It's not like that.
It's not yet. It might be approaching, but not yet.
You're not having to move out and live in it, are you? I hope things aren't that bad for you.
No, but we envision maybe someday that will be our home, and we'll travel the country, so we'll see what happens.
Brave people. You gotta figure out how internet plays in there then.
I think so. That's a number
that's
one
a requirement.
Priority.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So speaking of the internet, we should probably talk about things technology. This is actually one of our regular kind of thematic episodes that we do each month. And that is a focus on that we're doing all kind of church year long here, focus on social media for ministry, where we pick a particular social network, or in this case, networks, and talk a little bit about what they are, why you may want to consider them, who's using them, and how to use them for ministry. And this week, we picked some photo sharing sites, and photo sharing is really popular, and we're going to talk about Flickr and Google Photos. Probably before we get started, Sally, what do you use most often as far as online photo sharing sites? Where do you spend your time? Where are all your family photos?
Interestingly, that we picked these two to talk about, because they used to be on Flickr, and now I've migrated more to Google Photos. And
so you've got experience in both. So why did you move?
I think just the ease of use and Google search capabilities are just pretty amazing, and it ties in with the rest of my Google accounts, and I'm just kind of a Google girl, so just had to give it a try. What about you?
I had the same story, actually. I used Flickr almost exclusively for photos for a long time, mostly because it was cost-effective. That was back in the days where, and I paid the pro subscription, which was only like $19.95 a year, so $20 a year for basically unlimited storage. So you could store all your originals. And then you had access to all the features. And one of the reasons that I moved, because they kept, they would have grandfathered all the accounts in that were, you know, what I had, but because they don't have that same offering anymore. But they didn't move the technology down the field very far. I mean, they kind of stuck with the same interface, the same way to upload photos, the same slideshows. They really kind of were marching in place for the longest time. Now they've kind of upped the game a little bit, and I think they're probably on a par with Google Photos, but I had left long ago. And it's not an easy thing to move from one to the other. I mean, you have to download everything and upload, and you lose some of the indexing capabilities and the albums and those kinds of things. So it's not something you want to do, at the drop of a hat. So I think I still have my stuff up on, Flickr, but it's probably not current because I've really switched it to Google Photos. And I kind of use it as a photo backup as well. I mean, I've got local copies, but if I were to go to one place where I knew I'd have all my photos and organized and tagged and everything, it would be Google Photos at this point.
Okay. And we should probably, since you're talking about storage space and everything, talk a little bit about that while we're on that topic. The Flickr model now is that they give you 1 terabyte, which is kind of a lot of zeros, 1,000 gigabytes, and that's a lot of storage space. Although if perhaps you're like Martin, I think maybe you take things in RAW and larger formats, and those can really eat up the storage.
Yeah, and I've learned because I do try and take RAW, because you have a lot more capabilities, flexibilities in editing the photos afterwards, like white balance and those kinds of things. I tend to be a little more choosy than I used to be. I take a lot of pictures, but then after I go through them, I am pretty ruthless in getting rid of the ones that, I mean, I don't need 20 pictures of the same scene with the same people in them. I find the best one or two and I get rid of the rest. So it's kind of a discipline just to kind of thin things out. And it's a more enjoyable experience, I think, when you go back and look at your photos, if you're a little bit more disciplined in what you keep and what you pitch. So I'm looking at focus and composition and all those kinds of things. And I'll spend some time editing just a few photos versus, well, I don't want to throw anything away.
Good options. Good idea. On the other side of things, Google Photos will allow you unlimited storage as long as you store at 16 megapixels or lower. Right. And I would guess that doesn't describe your RAW file. So once you're up there in those larger file formats, you're going to eat away at your Google storage allotment. Now they give you, I can't even remember now how much they give you, 25 gig for free or something like that. But once you hit that threshold, then you have to start paying for storage. And it's not that expensive.
It's only like a buy, and I pay for extra storage on Google so I can, throw some of those RAW photos up there. Although more and more, I'm just using the iPhone camera. I'm trying to do a lot more with that because it's, for a lot of reasons, it takes great photos and it's always with me. It's convenient, whatever. And the iPhone with the latest iOS release takes RAW. So I can still shoot RAW images, and it's a 12 megapixel camera. So it falls underneath that Google Photos kind of cap, that 16 megabytes. So best of both worlds that way. Plus, as we probably both experienced, taking photos with your camera phone, both Flickr and Google Photos have the ability to auto-upload those. So there's not a lot of friction between you taking a photo and you getting it up in the cloud. So there's some real easy ways to turn that on in iOS or Android or whatever. And then you kind of have that that comfort to know that, hey, if something happens to the memory on your phone, or the phone gets damaged or lost or stolen, those photos are already up online.
Yep. So I think that's a pretty good discussion of Flickr and Google Photos. And maybe we would say we're done for the day, except the focus of this series was
social media, right?
Yeah, social media for ministry. And we had to kind of take a step back, and I guess it's a good exercise for both you and I, Martin, to kind of think through how these types of tools, these photo hosting sites, basically, could be used in a ministry setting. And so we went back to our standard infographic format. Let's see if I can share that on my screen for those that are watching the video. And on the infographic, we have 4 questions. Why would you use it? What would you use it for? Who's using and how you can use it? And so maybe we should spend some time just kind of walking through those questions, starting with the why you might use these tools in ministry.
Yeah, and that's a pretty easy one. Some of the things we've already talked about, but just kind of because of the way things work online and the ability to, for more multiple people to use them. This is a good ministry tool for those who take and collect photos for ministry purposes. So all those photos can be stored in one location. They can be indexed and categorized for easy searching. So if you're maintaining a collection of photos that you use for websites or bulletins or newsletters or just social media sharing, great location, great tools to use just to kind of keep all those together and then organize them so that you can create these folders, albums, whatever the tool of choice is, so that multiple people can contribute to them and maybe even build these up around events or just kind of a collaborative way to get everything in one place so that these images can be both viewed, shared, and reused.
Definitely. I'm reminded of our local high school, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, and their desktop publishing group responsible for the newspaper and the yearbook, those kind of things on campus. And one thing they do is they crowdsource event photos, just like you're describing. And so why just rely on their one photographer to cover the prom or homecoming or whatever the events are, sports events, whatever they are, they give out a URL where people can get to and add their own images to a group pool, and then they have the ability to select from all of those to include in the publications for the school. So definitely a plus for them.
Requires a little thought, you know, a little thinking ahead and making sure people are aware how to do that. But you've got, you know, hundreds potentially of photographers at these events because they many of them have these smartphones with great cameras built into them. Why not take advantage of that? And you know, you'd be surprised at some of the great candid shots and fun shots that you would never have gotten if you just had kind of relied on yourself or some designated photographer.
One more social aspect to it is that many times they allow commenting. I know in Google Photos they do. I'm thinking they do also on Flickr. And that commenting, you know, you could have discussions around some particular imagery that you have posted on your account. So that can be a good way to start a conversation as well.
Yeah, and we'll get to this in the who section, but a great example of kind of this collaborative collection of images and then sharing is our, you know, the photo contest that we had last year, the Wells Tech Photo Challenge, where we invited people to upload to a central location. We kind of did a little workaround so that we could apply, you know, Creative Commons and make sure that these were royalty free. But same concept applies, just get photos in a central location and then make them available for people to use for whatever purpose. And I know that is happening with some of the images that we have uploaded to Flickr in this case.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them around, so that's a good thing. That was what we were hoping for. And you mentioned Creative Commons, Martin. That's one thing that Flickr offers that Google Photos doesn't have currently.
You
can add your images with Creative Commons type licensing. As a default, it's copyright to you. But if you choose, you may select any level of Creative Commons. There's all kinds of variations of that, you know, available for non-commercial or commercial with modifications or without, share and share alike, or you can just say public domain. I release all rights to the photos, and that's a CC0 license that you can apply to it as well. So it's nice to have those ability to tag your photos that way. It's also nice from a ministry perspective to find photos that are tagged that way, and there's some great links that we can share that will allow you to go and search Flickr for things that are licensed with Creative Commons.
Yep, very good. Mm-hmm. So time to move on to what?
I think so. And under what, we have a lot of the things we've mentioned already. For instance, just make it your 100% photo storage location. So if you have an archive of photos of your church or school or both, go ahead and sync those photos to the cloud, to your Flickr or Google Photos account, and get everything in one place. The value of doing that is immense. And right off the bat, I can tell you on the Google Photos side, just the search capabilities are amazing. Awesome. Yeah. And they have facial recognition. So if you identify, you know, a particular pastor in your church history or whatever it is, it'll go through and find all the pictures of him. And you could search easily to find those pictures or whatever it may be, teachers, members, et cetera.
Ministry it also, leaders, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll search around events. Like you can type in baptism and just like that, you know, it'll find those pictures of baptism events or whatever.
Awesome. So, yep. Yeah. And I would say that Google is probably ahead of Flickr in that respect because they are kind of the search king and you would expect them to have that kind of recognition. And it has a faces kind of function where you could type in a name and find all the names of those or all the people with that face that was recognized through the software. Mm-hmm. Should note before we go further here in what we've been talking about photos, but both of these services actually do video as well. Mm-hmm. So you can upload video, and a lot of people use their camera phones for not just still photos, but videos. And you can upload videos and archive them and tag them the exact same way.
Yep, and I know Google goes up to 1080p, and I read something recently that you can upload a bunch of videos and batch upload them to YouTube from there or add them to your YouTube.
Right, because they're owned by the same people, right? YouTube and Google Photos, yep.
Under what I also have listed event photos. We talked about that a little bit, you know, great for collaboration if you've got lots of people taking them. It's wonderful to review that and kind of relive the moment. But one use I've found in a ministry setting is looking back a year or two or 5 years later when you want to repeat an event and getting an idea of how it was done in the past. It's really nice to have those reference photos in those kind of situations.
Yep. And then when you think about other types of categories, we talked about the ability to kind of capture facility photos. So what for introduction of your congregation or your school to visitors. So that's a good way to do that. Also, maybe just documenting stuff for insurance purposes. You know, a good way to kind of track everything that you've got. I also thought, and something that I've been doing a little bit lately is capturing images that you could put Bible verses on. Great way to communicate on social networks now. I've been doing a little bit of that with Instagram. I think I mentioned that last week, where you've got an image that's captured, find an appropriate Bible passage, and then share that. Really easy to do, and with the with services that I talked about like last week with Adobe Post or those kinds of things, you have a good selection of images that you can work with. Okay? Why not put those online as well?
Definitely. And then one more to mention, and I'm sure there's plenty of others people could come up with, is documentation. Sometimes your images may just be screen captures of computer programs or documentation of which button to flip to turn on the microphone system or whatever it is. You know, it's great to share that with the person you're trying to train one time, but it's even better to just archive that stuff in an image library so that anyone in the future can reference it. And so using images, maybe kind of going back to the old saying, a picture's worth a thousand words, it's a great way to explain something to someone.
Very good. We should maybe jump into who, and one of the who's, and this is the section where we kind of give you some examples, is the WellsTech Photo Challenge album. And last time I looked, what did we have, Sally? Over 500 images? Do I got that right?
How about 1,087?
Oh, 1,000.
Yeah. So we have a great collection here, and every single one of these is tagged for Creative Commons Zero, that public domain setting. Mm-hmm. And they're around different events in the church year. And so you can find things for particular times of year or events going on in your congregation. I know there's a good collection of them out here if you just type WellsTech Photo Album, I believe. Let me show more. Search WellsTech Photo Challenge. So if you type WellsTech Photo Challenge and then another word, let's try Lent. I don't think I spelled it right. Sorry, I needed an S in WellsTech. Wow.
But you got Lent right.
Thanks. then you're going to see all the images come up from the Wells Tech Photo Challenge album that have that Lenten theme. And we've got some Palm Sunday ones and Easter ones a little
florins,
bit.
Yep. Well. Nice. So, yeah, if you haven't looked at this, there is, and this is not just people with low-res cameras just taking quick candids or whatever. There are some beautiful still life types of images, nicely constructed things that you could add your own Bible verses to for almost every season of the church year. I think I don't think that anything is not represented. I think there's just a ton of great stuff here.
You've even got some pigs from the county fair. So we got it all in the Wells Tech Challenge album. So please do check it out. Another Wells
pork, from pork to palms. Yes.
There you go. I sense a title for this show, so beware. Okay. Another Wells album, Wells Inspirational Images, is another group pool. Now, not all of these are specifically written as copyright, but to order, add them to the pool, they're supposed to be giving up their copyright licenses. So just, you know, watch that. But just another great resource where you can search for different images around different themes. And they have 1,400 photos. So they're a little bit ahead of us, Martin, in the Wells Inspirational Image Pool.
It's not a contest, Sally.
Oh, got to get with the program. I don't know.
Right. We're all in this together. But yeah, that's been around for a lot longer, for one. And that was something that we developed, I don't know how many years ago, just trying to, for the same reason, to try and get people to contribute to a larger pool that could be shared for website usage and now, you know, social media sites, et cetera. Just Wells people getting together to share their stuff.
Definitely. All right, and then here's one from Martin Luther College. It's their photo gallery, and it is actually done on a site called SmugMug. So that's another player in this game. The reason I wanted to share it, and we actually have a link to it on the infographic, is the way they've organized it. So right off the bat, you're seeing more recent photos at the top of the list, but then they have things organized by year, and you can tell as you mouse over the different years what year you're going to. So if you're interested in a particular year and you drill down into that, then that's where they have their albums organized into admissions, athletics, community events, drama, graduation, whatever it may be. And again, you just continue to drill down and there's different folders underneath there. And so I think it's just a really great example of organizing and probably worth exploring a little bit to give you some ideas of how you might set up your albums and things when you're doing organization of your photos.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I've only played a little bit with SmugMug, and we experimented a little bit when we were trying to put this, these Wells images together, and decided that we went with Flickr instead. But nice presentation, and MLC has done just a fantastic job. They've got some great photographers there as well. We've talked to my nephew, Jonathan Witte. We've talked to Bill Peckrell. Both of them, you can hardly see them without them being accompanied by a camera. Right?
Definitely. Definitely. So that's a little bit of the who. We also have a link in that section to that Creative Commons search that's available on Flickr. Then the last category in our infographics is how. How do you go about doing this? And here we've included links to both Flickr and Google Photos help resources so you can learn about using them. But I would also encourage, as Martin mentioned earlier, to install the mobile apps on your phone or tablet and experience that as well, because that very much, they're both auto-syncing, and you can do editing right there on the mobile app, all kinds of things. So very much worth your time.
Very good. So check out the show notes for more information on those. And if you have ideas that maybe we didn't have time to talk about, or you'd want to share something that maybe we don't even know about as far as the social nature of sharing photos Like a number of them come to mind, even just using something like Facebook. You can store a ton of images there, and you're right in the social network already. We've talked about Instagram. Seems like photos are the thing. In fact, I read an article on Forbes just yesterday that talked about, you know, that's kind of going to be the focus here 2017, 2018, of just this social sharing and use of photos for advertising and corporations mm-hmm. getting into this, saying, hey, these get more clicks because people are you know, they like the images. They don't want to read or think too hard. They just know what they like. And that's why Instagram is kind of poised to take off, because it's all, you know, it's all photo-based. So
yeah.
Interesting stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's move along in our show outline. And I think we're up to Wells Now, which is a segment we do each week that talks about some of the happenings going on in and around the Wells. And we've got a couple events we want to talk about, Sally.
We do, starting with the announcement of the 2017 National Conference on Worship, Music, and the Arts. This is a semi-annual, I think. Every 3 years, whatever that's called.
Triannual, maybe.
There you go. event, and it is happening this summer, June 13th through 16th, at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. So right there near Milwaukee.
Near the border. Yep, mm-hmm. just us, very south side of the state. Yep.
Okay. And I have never, well, I shouldn't say that. I think I went to one worship at a worship conference 1 year, but I have heard such amazing things from worship conference. And they always have a festival choir and a high school honor choir that perform, full orchestra, and tons of breakout sessions and great things to participate in. And I think it's for worship leaders of all flavors, certainly. Pastors benefit from being at a worship conference, but also your choir directors and organists and people of those nature as well. So those that have been, I'm sure they've probably already registered by now, but if you've never experienced it, I don't think you'd be disappointed. The 2017 National Conference on Worship, Music, and the Arts, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yep, very nice facility down there at Carthage. You kind of got the place to yourself during that 3 day period. And yeah, I've been to one, and I didn't get to enjoy it as much as I would have hoped, because we were live streaming a bunch of the sessions, so I was running around in a golf cart from classroom to classroom, venue to venue. But one of the neat things that people always come out of worship conference just really enriched by is just the worship services themselves. And there's worship, I think, every morning and evening, and obviously you've got the best of the best doing the planning, and it's just a wonderful experience that you won't forget. So, and we are also wanting to remind our folks of another event. This is on August 10th, kind of last half of the summer, maybe before you get to school kind of event that you, or get to the school, start of school, you want to maybe take advantage of one last outing. And why not do it with other Wells members, as we have night, Wells night at Miller Park. Miller Park is where the Brewers play. Actually, I don't know who they are playing. One year I got lucky, they were playing my Giants. I don't know who they're playing this year. But tickets are now on sale, and we'll have a link in the show notes. That's August 10th, Wells night at Miller Park. I don't remember how many folks we had there the last couple years, but it was a lot. We got name up on the board and t-shirts and the whole thing. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I'm reading here in this article, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, that the Brewers will be playing the Minnesota Twins that
Minnesota
night. How's that
Brit
for a ride? Wow. So it seems that they're going to highlight Martin Luther College, the College of Ministerial Education, right here in lovely New Ulm, Minnesota, during the pregame festivities on August 10th. So, yeah, come out. The game time is 7:10, and Steve Thiesfeldt, the vice president of MLC and former MLC baseball coach, has joyfully agreed to throw out the ceremonial first pitch. So
that's fun.
Should be a lot of fun.
I know President Schrader did that 1 year. Brian Davison did that from Coin A 1 year. Mm-hmm. So it's getting to be quite a regular event. So mark that on your calendar, August 10th. Sally, let's move along to our tips or picks of the week. And I think you have a tip.
I do. Let's see, I quit share my screen and now I need it back up. I came across an article. This is from Make Use Of, and the title is Switching to Chromebook, 8 Apps to Replace Your Desktop Favorites. So the author of this particular article was raving about his new Chromebook. Let's see. And he said what he got. He got an Acer Chromebook 14 and said he couldn't be happier. He's inspired to do more work because he just loves the experience. So there's a big tip of your hat to the Chromebook line, and more people are making use of. But you do lose something in the process. When you go with Chromebooks, you aren't able to install software your traditional Windows or Mac computers can have on the local machine. And so this article actually highlights 8 different Chromebook apps that you can install from the Chrome Web Store and make use of on your Chromebook to kind of replace some of those standard local software applications that are usually on your computer. And it starts with playing music using Enjoy, which is a music playing app, obviously. There's an all-in-one messenger for all your different chat channels that you can pull into one and do all your chat in one place. They're promoting Knotes, a note-taking app to, you know, rival Evernote or OneNote. And then a text editor, Carrot. So if you're doing anything in a text editor, programming-wise, or anything like that, they have an online text editor, basically, that you can make use of on Chromebook. Number 5, I'm going to skip over because I'm coming back to that one. They've got an image editing choice here, Pixlr, which rivals Photoshop or GIMP. And then there's torrenting with JS Torrent, if you are of that nature. And finally, screen capture with Clipular,
yeah, interesting. Yeah.
So, but I did skip over number 5. It was distraction-free writing with the app called Writer. I think we've talked about Writer. It's been around for quite a while, Martin. You can find it in the Chrome Web Store, and you can get the link from the article. But I went ahead and installed it on my computer, and now it shows up on my apps menu. That's the menu that comes up on a blank tab, and there's a link to it over in your favorites bar if you have that available in Chrome. And it's this icon that starts with WR, and when you click it, it'll actually have you log into your Google account the first time. And so it gives, you know, access to your Google account. And then it says you can just write. It'll take care of saving your work automatically every few seconds. You don't have to worry about things like bolding and italics and all that. It's a very simple text experience. And that makes your focus on the words instead of going down some rabbit holes trying to get it formatted just right. It's much better to just spend your time focusing on what you're writing, get it out, and then worry about formatting it after the fact. And in that regard, it'll allow you to export your text. You could just copy and paste it, or it'll come into Google Docs, or you can print it to PDF or whatever you want to do. They do have a pro account, which gives you more capabilities, things like word count, thesaurus, revision history, ebook creation built right into it. You can store your documents in folders and folders within folders, writing statistics, all kinds of stuff that comes along with the pro account. It's $5 monthly, $25 yearly, or $50 lifetime. Pay once and you're covered forever. So that's a Writer app, and maybe something that would help me. I know I struggle with writing at times, and I'm very easily distracted. So maybe it's written for people like me who just need to get focused on their writing. So just one of many options on a Chromebook. Obviously, you can use it on other computers as well, but distraction-free writing with Writer.
Neat. It's a whole cottage industry of sorts, both distraction-free writing tools, because there's a bunch of them out there, but also these tools that are maybe weren't possible a few years back if you were on a Chromebook, because they required, you know, kind of a download and install on a Windows or Mac machine. So browserifying, you know, all these things has really been something that's gained a lot of popularity and made the Chromebook really a viable tool, not only for education, but for really anybody. So,
mm-hmm. very lightweight, easy to take on the go.
Fairly inexpensive as well. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick of the week, and I'm going to stay in the photography realm. As I mentioned earlier, I've been trying to take a lot more photos with the iPhone because the camera is so good. There is an industry around that, of course, as well, a whole set of tools that enhance the photo-taking experience that is the iPhone or, the Google phones or whatever. And one thing that I just started using is it comes in this little bag here, and it's an external lens that you can put on your iPhone. Now, the iPhone sensor is actually pretty small, so it does have some limitations. It has a fixed aperture, so you don't have the ability to change the f-stops, for instance, and get, background blur or zoom, or do any kind of optical zooming. So these lenses that you can buy, and this is one from Moment, you can buy that attach over the lens on the iPhone and add, that extra piece of glass in front. And this one happens to be a macro lens, so that when you put this on your iPhone, and we've talked about Oloclip before. In fact, I think we've given away those for some things in the past. This is a little bit higher end. This costs about $80, so it's not as expensive as a DSLR lens, but it's not inexpensive. But it really does enhance the ability of the iPhone or a Pixel or any kind of higher end phone to get more out of the camera than you normally could without the lens. And this particular system comes with a little plate that you apply to the back of the phone. They also come with cases that will allow you to stick the lens on the case. I opted for the little plate that you can put on the back of your phone. And some people, they wouldn't like that, but for me, it really doesn't matter because I put a case over the top of it anyway, and it fits just like that. And over the camera lens is a little what they call a bayonet, and then you just line up the grooves from the lens itself and push it in, and one quarter turn, the camera lens is there now affixed to the phone, and it's not coming off. It's really a nice tight fit. And then what you do is you can use their app or you can use the regular app that comes with the iPhone or any other app. But if you use their app, the camera will recognize what kind of lens it's using. So in the EXIF data, it'll say, yeah, you shot it with this particular lens. And in this case, you can get really close in. So I took a couple shots just before the show so I can show you what they look like. Here's the actual website of the Moment people, and it's a nice system. They offer four lenses right now: superfish or a fisheye lens, a wide lens, a telephoto lens, and then this macro lens. The macro lens has this hood that you can pull on or off. The hood allows you to get really close and still let light come in. You really have to get up close to do that. And then I took a couple photos. Here's an example of the Mexican rug from our living room, throw rug that we have. So did that. I took a couple other photos here. Here is the pant leg of the pants I'm wearing today. So you can, those of you that aren't watching, this is probably going to sound really strange, but you can see the actual fibers and how things are. How things look that you can really see by the human eye. And here is another one. This just happens to be a ceramic coaster that we had, food bought in Mexico when we were there a few years back. So kind of a different world when you strap one of these macro lenses on. But I hear good reviews about their wide-angle lens. That's great for landscapes or to get a more larger group of people. So if you're in a ministry context, maybe a Bible class setting or congregation-wide shot, those kinds of things. Just all kinds of applications for these lenses that kind of extend the ability of the iPhone or whatever camera phone you have to do a little bit more. Now, they're not going to make the image any clearer. Now, they will offer magnification, but the better the lens that you got, they're not going to diminish the quality. They're not going to let less light in. And that's really kind of the whole point, is to augment the angle or the capabilities of the lens without creating a problem. And these lenses are very, very well regarded. They're a metal casing, so they're actually very well constructed. They're a little bit heavier than kind of the Olaclip, which is a lot cheaper. And you can get an Olaclip that'll do like a 4-in-1, kind of the Swiss Army knife. But what you tend to get with like the Olaclip is a little bit of distortion on the edges. This is actually very sharp from edge to edge, and you get a nice clean image with these. So I think I haven't had it that long, but I'm really looking forward to testing this out and maybe even getting the like the wide angle version of this and attach that to the phone. So Moment Lenses, I will put a link to it in the show notes, but if you're looking to get a little bit more out of your camera phone, these might be something to consider.
And Martin, you mentioned earlier in the show that the iPhone will now take RAW. Is that certain level of iPhones or?
The 6, I think anything 6S, I'd have to check. I think it's 6, 6S or 7, 7S with running iOS 10, which is the latest one. So, and the thing about it, though, however, is you can't use the standard built-in camera app that comes with the iPhone to take RAW. It won't do it, even though the phone will, which is kind of odd. Okay. Maybe they'll add that later. So you have to use, and there's plenty of cameras out there that will. One of the ones that I would recommend would be Lightroom, which I've talked about in the past, that not only edits photos on the iPhone, but it has a camera app built in. And they just came out with a new feature in that camera, an HDR capability. So if you're in kind of challenging lighting situations, if you use the Lightroom HDR mode, it takes three successive photos in three different exposures, blends them together. So if you've got a bright background or maybe a window behind somebody and then somebody in the foreground, that's a really difficult lighting situation. Sometimes they'll be silhouetted or backlit or whatever. This kind of blends those three exposures and gives you kind of an even lighting experience and does a really nice job. Maybe I'll make that a pick in a later episode. But Lightroom is one camera app that's available, but there are plenty of others. So we could probably do a whole show on that kind of stuff too.
Good to know. All right. All right. Well, thanks for that.
All right. Shall we move on to ministry resources?
I think we shall, and I believe you're up. So go for it.
I got the stage yet. My ministry resource is something we talked about a year ago, and it's a memorization system, I'll call it, called On My Heart. And I wrote a little blog post about this and referenced the fact that we talked to Amanda Molstadt almost a year ago to the day. It was March 8th, so just a hair over a year. And she talked about something that she and her husband and some friends at church, maybe a pastor at their former church, had on their heart to do, and that was create a little memory system for catechumens, those people who are studying the catechism. But it's not limited to that. Could be for Sunday school kids or parents teaching kids the catechism or parents themselves. And it's a little series of cards that you can print out on your color printer, print double-sided, trim, and then put together on a binder ring, and you've got your own little flashcard system for confirmation type flashcards. And really innovative idea, and we enjoyed talking to Amanda. And once you do this, you've got four sets of these cards, and their website is really helpful to walk you through what it is and what it does. But the four sets each have four sections. And so there's a section about books of the Bible, so you can memorize the books of the Bible in their order. The catechism itself, of course, you have the Ten Commandments, Apostles' Creed, Baptism, Communion, Keys, Confession, Lord's Prayer. Bible passages that are related to those catechetical sections. And then Bible timelines, so what happened when and in what order. Just a nicely done piece of work. They talk through how it all works, how to put it together. And then when you go to download it, and again, this is totally free, you simply go to their little download section. You pick ELS or Wells, You pick the Bible translation, and I was interested to see that they now have the EHV, which is the new translation coming out of the Wartburg Project. The Evangelical Heritage Version is also here now, in addition to both NIVs, which is kind of nice, and the New King James. So you pick one of those, and then you pick which set you want, set 1, 2, 3, or 4, and it downloads a PDF. An 8.5 by 11 page. You double side it. It's 12 pages. You cut it out. You can laminate it. I think Amanda recommended you put it maybe on cardstock. It makes it a little bit more durable. Then you get a 1.5 or 2 inch binder ring. You cut a, you know, punch a hole in the corner, and you've got your flashcard. So, but this was just a super ministry resource and timely too, because we're getting into that season right now where you're thinking of confirmation class and the examination is coming along. Why not take some time and provide some resources to maybe your fifth and sixth graders who are thinking about catechism class and giving them a little bit of head start, or for you parents that maybe have forgotten some of these, just kind of a great all-around ministry resource. I thought it'd probably be a good time to bring up On My Heart, a Lutheran memory work program, totally free.
Most excellent. Thanks for sharing that. I remember just being excited and motivated by the fact that that tool was out there and at a low price tag, free. So
yep,
what a deal.
All right, let's move along to the next segment of the show, which is always our featured video.
And in keeping with the theme of the show, talking about Flickr and Google Photos, we found a Google Photos tutorial, and it's from 2016, fairly recent, and I think it'll give you a good introduction to how to store and back up and sync all your digital photos, even videos there on Google Photos. And then, you know, there are sharing capabilities and all different kinds of uses for Google Photos. So check out this video tutorial. It's about 20 minutes long. Should you give you a great introduction.
Very nice. Sally, we're going to do this show again next week. Episode 489 is just around the corner. What is our topic?
Well, we are planning to do community feedback. That's the show where we pull together all the different conversations we've been having during the month and share it with our audience so that everyone can learn from each other and grow your technology and ministry savviness, I guess is how you might say it. So looking forward to it. Always a good show. Always learn something new there. And we are also going to have a special guest with us, Martin, Pastor Stephen Daly. He's serving over in Michigan, and if I were had my brain straight, I'd tell you what town, but it's not coming to me right now. Anyway, he's serving in Michigan, and he is a bullet journal junkie, so he really likes the bullet journal system. He actually was going to come to Wells Tech Conference and present it in one of our Ignite sessions, but had some unfortunate encounter with his collarbone and a floor of some type and broke his collarbone and wasn't up to presenting then. So maybe we'll hear a little bit of his Ignite presentation when we talk to him on the show next week.
Very good. So if you're interested in that, or probably a whole cornucopia of different topics next week, those community feedback shows tend to go all over the place, something for everybody. Tune into show 489 next week. And feel free to contribute if you'd like. There are lots of ways to do that. Go to wellstech.wells.net and look across the top of the screen there, and you'll see all of your favorite social networks. Or send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're glad you tuned in, and bring your friends next week. Have a blessed Lenten season. See you in about 7 days. Bye-bye.